Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, recently there was a festival of the Bodhidharma on our calendar, so I thought I would take a look at Bodhidharma's teachings. And he has one set of teachings that are extremely practical, and they're also combined with the spirit of the matter. So I took a look at those. And what I would like to say is there's a lot of different translations and a lot of different ways to hear this teaching. And some will work better for some people than others. And as we go along, here and there I'll mention if there's some different words for the same thing that might work for different people in different ways. But to start out, I want to talk about perspective. And often in this, whenever you're having trouble, people will advise that you get some perspective. Or that's one of the common advice. And one way to get perspective is to sort of microscope down to, well, an example view of things is, say, at one point in my life, I was sitting next to some ants alongside a ditch. And I suddenly got their perspective. It's like they were at the top of this Grand Canyon, going around and doing these things importantly or not. And somehow that translates to my own life of an ant, in a sense, my own small life, and gives me some perspective. And then you can also try going further out. And some people have had this experience where maybe if you have a near-death experience or it just occurs to you at some point, you might have the sensation of leaving your body and seeing what's going on from, say, the ceiling or from another angle altogether. Or you could go even further out into a wider perspective where you have the universe of stars, which is... it came very close to home for me at one point when I was sitting on the roof during an asteroid, is that what they're called? Meteor shower. In any case, a meteor shower. And the monk I was with had a really wonderful telescope, so you could look up into the sky and really see how much more of the world there is to this universe than what we usually look at. And for me, that's sort of like, it just makes things so much easier. But then another way of developing perspective is to look inward. And I came across a young child's stumbling across this inward perspective. And in the book I called And There Was Light, but I also came across an essay by the same author. And so for just a page, I'd like to read to show how his perspective changed. It's Jacques Lussiron. I'm sure there's a better way to pronounce that, but that's the best I know. He says, "Barely 10 days after the accident that blinded me, I made the basic discovery. I am still entranced by it. The only way I can describe that experience is in clear and direct words. I had completely lost the sight of my eyes. I could not see the light of the world anymore. Yet the light was still there. It was there. Try to imagine what a surprise that must have been for a boy not yet 8 years old. True, I could not see the light outside myself anymore. All the world around me was convinced that I had lost it forever. and yet I felt it gushing forth and brimming over. I had only to receive it. It was unavoidably there. It was all there, and I found again its movement and shades, that is, its colors, which I had loved so passionately a few weeks before. And he has one more discovery I'll come back to. But this is the first of the two, or this is similar. Everyone has their own experience of it, of the two entrances to the way, which Bodhidharma writes about. The first entrance is often called the entrance of reason, which is fine if you, well, I don't like it, but it's also translated as the entrance of inner truth. In the book Zendan, which I have not read all of, I just opened it to find this section on Bodhidharma's teaching. It says, entering through inner truth means using the teaching to awake to the source. It means deep faith that living beings, both ordinary and sage, share one and the same reality nature. Being in accord with the real inner truth, without discrimination, it is still and cannot be grasped. And I think Reverend Master Khotan also was pointing toward it in the first of the five diamond points that he talks about, the pure and bright mind, the soft and flexible mind. So for me, in a sense, that's all I need to hear, and I feel like I'm good to go. But then your daily life does come along, and people find that there are aspects of life that can make you disregard this inner truth, or seem to invite you to disregard the inner truth. And this is the second entrance to the way, or the Tao, that Bodhidharma lists, which is entrance by practice. And I think of it as gifts from the practical life, like when you stub your toe and you suddenly realize you're not paying attention, or when you think that you're a loving person and yet someone is henpecking you like crazy and it's driving you mad. So, or what else? It can get more and more challenging. Things are that you do not, you'd rather weren't in your life are actually the perfect teaching, because they help you discover where your limitations are and thereby what you can let go of to become more in accord with the way. If you've ever had one of those mornings where you got out of the wrong side of the bed, that's one of the examples of the beginning of that kind of teaching of practice. But it also goes deeper and further in that you're either yourself or your loved ones will die or will become very sick or will meet misfortune. And that's another aspect of this dealing with the practical side of it. He says there are many roads to the path, but there are four that encompass most of these roads. And the first one is often translated as suffering injustice. But I've also heard it translated as requiting hatred or simply accepting injustice, because there is a bigger picture and it makes sense is one of the ways it's put forth. But whether it makes sense or not, that's what's happening. And the practice of letting go of injustice. Well, first of all, injustice gets you. Nobody, generally, people don't like it when things are unfair. It feels unfair when you go to jail and you hadn't even committed a crime. And yet many people who go to jail for years will come out of it and say, there's no point in having bitterness. They accept this injustice, and that allows them, their life, to move on. The second one is adapting to conditions, good or bad. Sometimes I think of these things as sort of like if there were a voice to the universe that's saying, if I am this way, can you still see me? And if the conditions, good or bad, can be tempting to get pulled off course, if you think something good is happening, before you know it, you want it to keep happening. You don't want to lose it. Or if you think something bad is happening, you want to fight it. And adapting to conditions is a matter of going back into the inner truth and finding an answer in that regard. For me, when I had children, young children, who I thought, it sounds a bit foolish, but I felt they were divine, you know, just that's the way mothers do, I guess. But I felt they were perfect and beautiful, and yet they screamed and cried, and sometimes with such anguish that I felt like I could experience the suffering of the universe through what I was hearing. And yet I had to help them. So I had to find a place that was beyond that so that I could offer them something other than just joining in their sorrow. These conditions can basically, they can get your attention, because what can happen is, even though the inner truth or the Buddha nature is there, it can get covered over by the little thises and thats that we get involved in. So these conditions can actually pull you back to attention. And again, this author Jacques said he had some discoveries after his blindness. And one of those is that he says, I quickly learned that I knocked against things only when I forgot the light. When I paid constant attention to the light, I ran a much smaller risk. The second great discovery came almost immediately afterward. There was only one way to see the inner light, and that was to love. When I was overcome with sorrow, when I let anger take hold of me, when I envied those who saw, the light immediately decreased. Sometimes it even went out completely. Then I became blind. But this blindness was a state of not loving anymore, of sadness. It was not the loss of one's eyes. That I will refer back to that in a minute. But then for the third of the ways of practical or the entrance by conduct that Bodhidharma lists is seeking nothing. And if you're familiar with the writings of G.U. Kennett, you'll know that she had a lot of struggles in the monastery in Japan, and at one point her teacher said, don't expect very much. And then later on he said, seek nothing, expect nothing, just live. And the thing about that advice is it's not very glamorous. It doesn't lead you on with anything to be greedy about. And yet to actually practice it opens up a different perspective. And the fourth aspect of conduct is practicing Dharma. And one of the things that he starts off right away about is giving. Not being selfish, not being stingy, not holding back. Not holding back in the heart. But this word giving could also be translated as love. And I just, this reminded me of this quote from the Bible, which I'm not a Bible reader, but I've always been struck by it because my people who raised me were, and they used the King James Bible. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. But the thing is, when I went to look it up, what I saw was they translated as charity. King James, an earlier version of the Bible, translated as charity. And I asked Reverend Master Khotun about it, and he said that's because it's caritas, which is love of all beings. So basically, it's the same as the giving that is listed in Buddhist paramitas. There's more to that quote, but I won't do it. And that comes from Corinthians. I think that's how you say it. But it emphasizes love and as above mystical knowledge or anything else, nothing is as important as love or giving. And in fact, when people came to Shakyamuni Buddha after his enlightenment experience, they asked him, there was an occasion where he was asked, how can we be like you? And this is one of my favorite teachings, but he said, simply embrace impermanence. And the people said, we can't do that. What else can we do? And so he said, okay, then try giving. And so that is like the first principle, considered one of the first principles. But there's five more that get listed commonly as ways to cross over to the other shore, or in other words, ways to practice toward enlightenment. And one of them is morality, just the precepts, patient endurance, energetic progress or vigor, meditation and wisdom. So, for however I had in mind to wrap this all up, I did at least want to end with a quote from Bandoa, which is, before I do that, I did want to show you this thing, which is, it's a mixture, it's a saying that was hung outside the priory back in the old days, and I won't show it to you for long, I'll read it to you, but there's a picture of Jisho, who's actually, is that his name? Jisho? Or Joshu? Joshu. He's an old saint in Zen Buddhism, but the quote seems to come from Lao Tzu, and I think it's a case where whatever culture the understanding passes through, it picks up, you know, some of the different words, but it says the same thing. And what this says is, if you don't realize the source, you stumble in confusion and sorrow. When you realize where you come from, you naturally become tolerant, disinterested, amused, kind-hearted as a grandmother, dignified as a king. Immersed in the wonder of the Tao, you can deal with whatever life brings you. And when death comes, you are ready. So I'll just show you the picture of Joshua. I probably can't see it. No, never mind.
You could hold it up to the...
You could. Oh, if you hold it up. Just, yeah. He's a fairly famous monk that sometimes reminds me of Reverend Master Kotan. But... Okay, so for the last, from Bendoa, which is in the Shobo Genzo about practicing in daily life, basically. In olden times, that which brought a person to Buddhism was the grass, flowers, mountains, or streams. Some received the truth of the Buddha by taking dirt, stones, sand, or grit in their hands. The truth exceeds all forms, so that even a speck of dust can preach a sermon. Okay, I'll call that homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.